In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Friday, October 14th, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It is the Federal News Countdown every Friday at 3. Two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are most important to people who work for the government, rank them in order from number 3 to number 1, and come in the studio and join me to count them down on the Federal News Countdown. And my two experts this week are Frank Reeder, a veteran of OMB, among other agencies, and now involved in any number of different things. For example, you and Karen Evans partnered on a cybersecurity effort recently, Frank, that I enjoy hearing a lot about. How are you? It's good to see you.
Good to be here.
And Alan Paller of the SANS Institute, and resident, not just resident here, but resident all over the place, expert in cybersecurity and other technology issues. It's great to have you in the studio for the first time. You've been on the show a number of times. But it's good
I've
to
heard
see
it
you.
Enough. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, I'm happy to have you. I am pleased that you're both here, and we're ready to get underway with
number three.
The third most important federal news story of the week, as chosen by Frank Reeder, is the GovExec story headlined, Obama order will require agencies to better secure classified info. This is as a result of WikiLeaks, and as I read this story, Frank, it occurred to me, WikiLeaks may fade from our current memory, things that we're thinking about front, top of mind, but this, the residual effects will be around decades, do you think?
Yeah, and from a number of different perspectives. I mean, WikiLeaks, to me, was a wake-up call to anybody doing business with the public's money, or in fact, not even just the public's money, that expectations of what can be kept secret or confidential that we held up to that point were probably based in fantasy. I'm not making the there is no privacy, there is no security argument, but rather that the standard of what will what can and will be kept confidential has changed. What this order, it seems to me, embodied is this administration and any administration would have to grappling with three dilemmas. One is that, or three competing values, perhaps more accurately. How do we keep things secret that are kept, that need to be kept secret? How do we share information? The one major weakness in our information infrastructure that became apparent post 9/11 was that folks who had information that was sensitive weren't sharing it. And so we need, on the one hand, to be able to secure it. On the other hand, within a fairly large and complex community, we need to be able to share it. And third, whether you think it's important as a democratic value or not, inevitably, stuff will get out, and how do we deal with disclosing information, whether intentionally or inadvertently? There will be other private Mannings in the world. Mm-hmm. We can, if the courts choose to lock them up and throw away the key, and that simply addresses the actions of one person.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the notion that things that we thought were secret will not necessarily any longer be secret. How did we get to that spot? Was it neglect? Was it ignorance? Was it naivete? Was it a combination of all of those? Or does it not really matter? I'm asking that just from a for a frame of reference. How do we move forward by addressing one of these or a combination of these three things? Or does it not really matter?
Well, it's useful only in the sense that at least my perspective, and there are lots of factors that drove this, technology was the catalyst that changed this dynamic, and therefore the ability not only to gain access to information, but to collect it in and communicate it in bursts that were unimaginable even 5 or 10 years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to change the direction of that curve, mm-hmm. and so any assumptions we make that we can somehow, if not reverse, freeze where we are, I think are dangerously naive.
I certainly understand that any of those three would be benign, not malignant, not that somebody certainly set out to, well, let's leave this open so somebody can steal it. I get that. But the idea that we just didn't get around to it or we just didn't think of it yet still strikes me as at least partially an element of neglect.
Certainly, but I think that if we chalk it up simply to neglect and assume that we can, by better training or better technology, eliminate the risk or substantially eliminate it, again, I think we're being naive.
Yeah, Frank Reeder's story number three on the countdown this week is from GovExec by way of the National Journal. The headline is Obama Order Will Require Agencies to Better Secure Classified Information. That story and all of the stories on the countdown this week are linked up at federalnewsradio.com on the in-depth page. Alan Paller, your story number three is headlined Women and Minorities Scarce in IT Security Field. Profession doesn't mirror the rest of American workforce. It's from GovInfo Security. What did you see here as the most significant element? Because there are a lot of moving parts in this story about the makeup of the IT workforce.
There were many. I guess my resonance was that we're missing half the smart people, or maybe 70% of the smart people in the country, if we just limit it to one color and one sex. And I like the part of the story that focused on your friend Karen Evans and the work that she's doing with the U.S. Cyber Challenge, because what has not happened, the current education system is pretty much all male. The computer science teachers are mostly male. There are a few women in college, but in high school, the computing courses are pretty much all male. I've been visiting a lot of them. There might be one girl in the class, but she's a heroine to be able to stand up to them.
Right.
So what I love about the program is they've got a partnership in Los Angeles County with the minority schools, so that they're focusing on bringing minority kids in. And more importantly, Karen mentioned they're moving into the middle schools, and with a program that was the concept actually came from the dynamic Jane Lute, who is the deputy secretary at Department of Homeland Security, of focusing on girls in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
Before the teachers, as Carolyn Layton said, the teachers push the girls away from this. Before the girls get told they can't do it,
mm-hmm.
catch them early, get them excited, not about computers so much, but about programming. And there are wonderful new languages that allow you to build videos and things with programming, so it's not just learning coding. And we think that getting earlier in the cycle, picking the girls who are excited about this and getting them started, will have them push past the teachers who try to push them off track.
Now, far be it from me to argue with Carolyn Layton, but as the father of a middle school boy, my thought is that it's more that it might not be as much the teachers pushing them away as them pushing themselves away by saying either, I don't care about science, I'm not into science and technology, or I don't want to go sit in a room with 15 boys and be the only girl. There may be some sociological things that are at work there that aren't apparent on the surface, but that a program like this can address just as well.
I know the second part of yours is absolutely true. That mm-hmm. they do, in fact, choose not to. They go back in the room,
right.
See all the boys, and turn around and
they
walk
like
back.
They like that idea. But
no, they don't. They don't like being the. It's they might at college level, but uh-huh. at the middle school and high school level, that's not. That just isn't something that seems to draw in the girls. So you're absolutely right. We the only place we've seen success in getting girls engaged in this program is when you go to a girls' school right now.
Uh-huh.
Then you can get whole teams. And they do fine. But girls are great at this. The two best intrusion detection analysts ever in the United States were both women.
Mm-hmm.
That we're missing this enormous talent pool, and for either reason, either because the teachers are telling them not to, or because they're deciding
we need to
give them a better opportunity. And I like what Karen's doing in that area.
It seems to me too that the middle school is the fertile harvest here. We'll talk about this a little bit more because I don't normally give them away, but Frank, this is your number two most important story of the week. So we'll talk about this a little more when we come back from the break on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week with Frank Reeder and Alan Paller continues in just a moment.
Over the skies, it says the enemy can't see you. To the Marines who carry out their mission on the ground, it says, I have your back. To adversaries, it says, don't even think about it. It is the F-35B, the fifth-generation multi-role fighter jet that combines short takeoff and vertical landing capability with supersonic speed and radar-evading stealth. The F-35B, the multi-role fighter that's equipped to go wherever Marines must go. Wherever the mission takes them, our Marines know it will be there. It's the F-35B, a fighter jet that can take off and land virtually anywhere, from the most remote, austere airfields and roads to modern ships. That means it can be based close to frontline combat, shrinking the distance between base and target. For the Marines and for our nation, that's a game-changing advantage. The F-35B, the multi-role fighter that's equipped to go wherever Marines must go.
Hi, welcome to Best Buy. Can I help you?
Yeah, my brother got an Insignia HD Radio Portable last month, and he really enjoys his workouts now.
Yep, HD Radio broadcasts are great. All kinds of new stuff on the HD2, HD3 channels.
And the Insignia HD Radio Portable is $49.99?
Yes, it's a great value.
Whoa, lead the way.
And did you know Insignia also offers an HD Radio Boombox for just $99?
Insignia HD Radio receivers. Get them now at Best Buy. HD Radio, more radio, more value.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Where did you leave it? Where could it have possibly gone? It's frustrating because you used to have your motivation with you all the time, and now, ugh. That's okay. We'll help you find it. First, let's find your reason. You know, your reason. What's that thing that makes you want to live to an age where you can say whatever you want to whomever you want, and somehow it becomes charming? Next, find your thing. What is that healthy thing you actually love doing? There's got to be one, right? Finally, go find your partner. Who's the ping to your pong? The downward to your dog? Who'll keep your butt moving and vice versa? Find all of those things. We're pretty sure your motivation will magically appear. But if you're still having trouble finding it, try looking really, really hard in the mirror. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we're here to help you find your motivation to thrive. Visit kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. The National Archives and Records Administration opens a brand new center in St. Louis this weekend. The center's director will give us a tour. Plus, new rules affect how agencies use blanket purchase agreements. GSA's man in charge joins us with what it means for you. Those stories and more Monday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown is where two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are most important from this week to people who work for the government, rank them in order, and count them down. And my experts this week are Frank Reeder and Alan Paller, and we're up to
number two.
As I mentioned before the break, Frank, your second most important story is the same as Alan's third most important story, and that's the GovInfo security story headlined, Women and Minorities Scarce in the IT Security Field. And I noted something that you both owned up to. I'll give you both credit. You both seem to be quoted in this story. How interesting is that? You take a little bit different. You have a different take, though, on this whole concept than Alan does, right, Frank?
First, you nailed it. The real reason for picking this story is
because you're in it. Of course,
we're in it. And,
of course, I understand.
Therefore, it must be revealed truth. I think I would say that in this case, Alan's and my views are complementary. I mean, certainly, we've got to reach out and touch this huge pool of both people of color and of women who aren't attracted to the field, and there are a number of things going on. Cyber Challenge being a terrific example of a program that is showing kids that there is an opportunity in this field who might not otherwise be attracted to it. The issue for us, and maybe we need to have more of the Melissa Hathaways whom you've interviewed on the air visible to these folks, is I sense that they're part of the problem, maybe just the absence of role models.
Mm-hmm.
If kids who look like me aren't succeeding in this field, or I should say adults who, when they were kids, looked like me,
right,
I'm less likely to be attracted to it. It's mm-hmm. sort of the phenomenon of underrepresentation of black kids in golf and tennis.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Tiger Woods and the Williams sisters will turn that around. But it's got to be just more than that.
Mm-hmm.
The other pieces of this that attracted me to this story were, this is, of course, based on the very basic premise that we simply don't have enough of these people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not just a matter of social equity, which I think is terribly important, but also that we simply need a larger pool in order to be able to get the talent that we need. Eric starts with the statistic that there's zero unemployment. And last time I checked, 3% unemployment was considered to be full employment.
Right.
So we've got a serious negative situation.
Uh-huh.
In fact, we have zero unemployment. The other piece of this story that Eric didn't hit, and again, in the interest of full disclosure, one of the entities with which I'm associated is something called the National Board of Information Security Examiners. We really don't have cues in the marketplace as to who's qualified to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
We have some certification programs that are beginning to do this. We talked about this before on previous shows. So, again, this is a story with a lot of different dimensions, both in terms of the attention-getting headline. And it's great to get headlines
mm-hmm.
that there are groups that are underrepresented. But equally importantly, I think that we have a serious shortage in this area, and we have a less than mature method of determining who indeed is qualified.
Alan, this is something that Frank and I have talked about before. You and I have talked about this on the air before. Karen, we've mentioned Melissa Hathaway and on everybody, industry people and everyone. There is a consensus of the facts that there aren't enough people, and we need more, and we need to find them from wherever we can find them. Where that kind of goes awry is what Frank was just talking about, which is what makes a good one? What makes a good IT security person? What makes a good IT person in general? And other than the certifications that are out there, hasn't yet at least been the winnowing process where you have a stack of 10 resumes or 100 or whatever. Here are the attributes for somebody who hasn't maybe done it before, because you need a whole bunch of people who haven't done it before because of the shortages that we're talking about here.
The place where what you're describing meets the critical need is in the military.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to get the people they need to protect their systems and also to project power in cyberspace. They have the same shortage that the industry does and civilian government does. The Air Force is way ahead of everybody else on this. Mm-hmm. They have taken this idea of classroom training and said, that's not how we train pilots. We train pilots a little bit of classroom, go up and fly, come back, debrief, go a little bit of training, go up and fly every day. And they have transformed the training, their intermediate training and their undergraduate training, which is the undergraduate is the first few years of office. They're both officers and enlisted men, but there's a early training and middle training, especially the middle training. It's pretty much all hands-on.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get out unless you succeed in the exercises.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Mike Asante's work at the National Board of Information Security Examiners is, too. You don't get out because you can pass a test where you can answer questions out of a book. You get out because you can do the job in the space. Now, there are lots of ways of measuring that, but that's what their task is. And I think that's what the commanders want out of the military.
Right.
But I think that's what the employers want, too, is people
yeah.
who, when they sit down, they're able to do the job, not that they can talk about doing the job.
Then I guess the question becomes, how do you take that and, I mean, copy it, really, if it's working, and scale it to the degree that you need to scale it to? Because it seems to me there would be a lot of people out there who knew if there was opportunity that they would want to sign up for it.
You're doing it in models. You've got to do it places. The Air Force had to spend a lot of money to build those courses.
Okay.
Massive amounts of energy to build the flight simulators,
mm-hmm.
but they're cyber flight simulators so that they could have lots of people doing it. So the next place that we see it happening is in the energy industry, where people really care about having the people who are protecting the power systems be protected. We see it going there, and we think that may be the critical mass point where everybody says, looks over the fence. A lot of people don't want to look over the fence into the military because they don't have the discipline to do 14 hard weeks and throw them out if they fail at any one of 5 points. A lot of people don't want to do that. But in the energy industry, it's more of a sort of a normal businessy world. We think that's the place where it'll hit critical mass.
So any thoughts about a timeline, like when that might work? Or because that does seem like that would be
the next game changer. 4 to 6 months, you'll see the demonstrations. By next summer, it'll either have worked or there's a problem. It might not work in the energy industry because it does take discipline. Mm-hmm. If you're gonna throw a guy out because he can't do it, as opposed to he can't pass a test, mm-hmm. a written test, that's a pretty high standard. We don't do that very many places.
No, so that's not unreasonable given the stakes.
I feel the same way you do. We'll have to see whether the energy industry feels that way.
Frank Reeder's story number 2 on the Federal News Countdown is the same as Alan Paller's story number 3. It is the GovInfoSecurity.com story headlined Women and Minorities Scarce in the IT Security Field. You can read it and all of the stories we're counting down on the Federal News Countdown on the in-depth page at FederalNewsRadio.com. Alan Paller's story number 2 on the Countdown when we continue in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Do you know us? We employ more than 70,000 people in more than 800 locations throughout the United States. Through our network of suppliers, we indirectly enable tens of thousands of American jobs. Tens of thousands. Jobs that put food on the table. Jobs that put kids through college. Jobs that keep our economy going. And yet, many of you don't even know who we are. Our name is United Technologies. We are Carrier, Hamilton Sunstrand, Otis, Pratt & Whitney, Sikorsky, and UTC Fire and Security. 6 businesses united as one powerful company. We may be the biggest unknown company in America, but our jobs power the economy, and our technologies, products, and services power the world. United Technologies. Get to know more about us at utc.com.
CSC will host a special open house hiring event in support of their national security agency contracts for their Hanover, Maryland openings on Friday, October 14th from 3 to 7 p.m. and Saturday, October 15th from 8 a.m. to noon at CSC, 7231 Parkway Drive, Hanover. CSC, named in Fortune Magazine's Most Admired Companies, is seeking to fill a variety of positions. For more information, visit csc.com/careers and click on the Careers Events tab, an equal opportunity employer.
Your new Cocker Spaniel is waiting to meet you, and you don't have to travel very far. This weekend and almost every weekend, Oldies But Goodies Cocker Spaniel Rescue holds at least one adoption show in the greater D.C. area. Find out where we'll be this weekend by checking out CockerSpanielRescue.com. Stop by to meet the many homeless Cockers of all ages who are looking for their new home. These dogs have already been spayed or neutered and have all their shots. For more information on adoption, fostering, or volunteering, visit CockerSpanielRescue.com. Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Be confident, be active. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Building confidence can increase short-term physical activity. Patients with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD, were divided into 3 groups. One group took a self-confidence program with a specific message. Janet Larson at the University of Michigan says the message is...
Exercise is fun. Any increase in physical activity will provide some health benefits.
activity levels were compared between the groups to measure the effects of the program.
The group that received the competence-building program increased their light physical activity by an average of 20 minutes a day.
The study, presented at the American Thoracic Society 2011 conference in Denver, was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Government IT executives, step into the past to start shaping the future at this year's Executive Leadership Conference in Colonial Williamsburg. The American Council for Technology and the Industry Advisory Council's ELC Conference, October 23rd through the 25th, brings together government and industry leaders to address the acquisition, security, and human capital challenges you face in your increasingly mobile world. Register today at actgov.org. That's www.actgov.org.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown is on every week at 3 o'clock, every Friday. At 3, and two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories from the week that they think are the three most important to people who work for the government. They rank them in order from number 3 to number 1, and they come into the studio and count them down with me on the Federal News Countdown. My experts this week are Frank Reeder and Alan Paller. And Alan, your story number 2 is from the Financial Times, and the headline is Defense Groups Turn to Cybersecurity. Now, just for kicks, I Googled the words defense groups cybersecurity, and I got stories that are similar to what this story talks about, which is defense contractors getting into the cybersecurity business or expanding their footprint in the cybersecurity business that went back at least 5 years.
Right.
So the fact what's in the story is not necessarily top of mind headline breaking news. What's here that you thought was important?
It's the intersection between their moving into the field and the federal budget declining in defense. So it is a transformational. So you're right. I actually picked this story up 4 or 5 months ago when one of the other newspapers did a story about how every single one of the defense contractors has 3 or 4 major new areas they're doing, and one of them is cyber at every single one of them.
Mm-hmm.
What's changed is that was all additive 3 months ago, 8 months ago. Now it's replacement money. And it's putting extraordinary pressure on the IT security people in those organizations. The people responsible for securing the computers are now having to become sales guys because
mm-hmm.
they're the only people who really know how to do this, so they send them out. But that's not really what triggered this story. What triggered this story is a false belief that cybersecurity, that there's a lot of money to be made in cybersecurity. What is happening is that money is moving within cybersecurity.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of new money. The new money was there 2 years ago. It was there last year. It's now fading. There was extra money, lots of extra money from the redevelopment money that we had. But there's very little new money here. So what's actually happening is at the same point that the defense contractors are saying, we're going to put all our resources into growing this thing, they're going to be growing it at the expense of their own cyber business, meaning these people think there's going to be new money for each of these cyber initiatives, but the money's actually got to come out of other initiatives.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the false belief that I wanted to point out, that they must, if everybody's going in that direction, they must be going because there's new money, and
mm-hmm.
it's just not there. They're going to basically be eating their own children.
But I had Deputy Secretary Lynn on his next to last day on the job on this show tell me we're going to be spending more on cybersecurity. So what you're saying is his statement is true, but since the top line is going to stay the same or go down, Frank, you're nodding your head in agreement with what you think I'm about to say. That is, since the top line's going to go down if it doesn't stay the same, then ultimately eating your own. Is that right? Am I headed in the right direction?
I think that, I don't want to put words in Alan's mouth, I think that's where he was going.
Yeah.
There's another dimension to this that I think is equally important, and I guess it's a hobby horse that both Alan and I have been riding for a little bit. The money to be made here is going to be harder to make. The folks who have been in the cybersecurity business have had an easy go of it. Alan has referred to as security by three-ring binder. You can write reports. So it's not just that the dollars are going to be more competitive, but they're simply going to have to be more competent to get them.
Mm-hmm. The argument has been made by a number of people in this business, off the record, that there are a lot of vendors in this space that are simply slapping cybersecurity on whatever else they already had in their inventory and trying to sell it to the government. Do you believe, Alan, based on the increased competition that we're going to see for a smaller pool, that some of that might go away?
What happens in any new field when you get a new name is they rename other things that. So if you were doing IT on a big data center and having five users, now you're a cloud.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were doing anything with system administration, you're protecting them by giving them a user ID. Now you're a cybersecurity thing. So I want to go back to Bill Lynn's comment, because it really is absolutely central. It was first stated early, and that's we are spending too much money on the kinetic weapons, where our competitors have decided that if they spend more money on cyber, they can control our command and control systems. And if we don't own our targeting information, we don't have kinetic weapons.
Mm-hmm.
We have kinetic bombs
that can
kill us.
Right.
And you saw a little of that in the story I didn't put in, which was a story about the Creech Air Force Base, the virus inside the Predator
in
the drones. So we have to spend more money on the command and control. But what that's not... There's $300 million a year. There's close to $1 billion a year being spent on these reports. When Bill Lynn says we're going to spend more money, he means what Frank means, which is we're going to spend money doing security, not writing about security.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to build it in the weapon systems. We're going to make sure our systems are secure. And the skills you need are not getting a certified professional security person and writing a report. You just don't need them anymore. So that's what I mean by eating the children. They have... Companies have 400, 500, 600 people doing those reports.
Mm-hmm.
Those people are going to have to be moving into the money that Bill Lynn is talking about.
If I were choosing stories, which I only do in an emergency, I would have chosen that drone virus story as the number one this week, just because considering the possibility that something like a drone that we rely on now so heavily to fight wars for us can contract a virus like that is chilling to me. What did you take away? And Frank, I want to get your thoughts too on that story. What, if anything, bothered you about that concept the most?
It was the third piece of evidence that cyber attacks can jump over air gaps. So the first was the one in CENTCOM that Bill Lynn made public. The second was a Stuxnet attack in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have a third one. And sort of three is the charm. People are going to get over the idea that if it's not connected to the internet, it's safe.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're past that. That's the main thing I got out of that.
Frank, what did you take away from that?
Not really much to add on that, except to go back to the point that you made earlier, that we're in a whole different game.
Mm-hmm. The number two story of the week, selected by Alan Pallers from the Financial Times. The headline is Defense Groups Turn to Cybersecurity, and you can read it on federalnewsradio.com on the In-Depth page. The number one stories of the week is chosen by Frank Reeder and Alan Paller when In-Depth continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Navy is pressing ahead with its latest attempt to build a next-generation enterprise network. The service has just released a draft request for proposals to industry to run the Navy systems, which are already the largest intranet in the world. The Navy wants NGEN to be a continuously evolving and improving network, rather than a single vendor owning and operating the systems, as is the case right now. The Navy will own the network. Vendors will compete to operate 38 separate enterprise services.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com. Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris.
Dr. Dewey Murdick is the program manager of FUSE, Foresight and Understanding from Scientific Exposition.
There's a lot of desire to keep our decision leaders, give them insight so they can anticipate technical change rather than just react to it. So analysts are continually looking through a lot of information, trying to find what technologies and what capabilities are coming around the corner that we need to be able to respond to.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federal drive. Wake up and drive in with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week with the most important stories as chosen by Frank Reeder and Alan Paller. And both of you have great number one stories this week.
Number one!
The most important federal news story of the week is chosen by Frank Reeder. Is from the Washington Post, the headline, Occupy D.C. Protesters Rally in Freedom Plaza. And the clock is actually ticking because permits are going away, not just here in Washington, but all over the place. What is this movement, this Occupy fill-in-the-blank movement, look like to you, Frank?
Well, a couple of things. One, and I think this is particularly important for the folks who are likely to be listening to this, since presumably they're predominantly in this area. I don't think we have a full appreciation yet of how much anger, how much alienation there is in the population. And now we have, you know, the two ends of the political spectrum, the those at the right end of the spectrum who organized largely under the banner of the Tea Party, and now pretty much a left end of the spectrum saying, you know, we're fed up, we won't take it anymore. That's what I'm taking from this story. There's a secondary story that's kind of interesting, and that is how differently the D.C. police responded to this than the New York police mm-hmm. have so far. But what I think we in Washington in particular, who still live in this in a bit of a hot house not in the sense of being under pressure, although we are that too, but in a rarefied environment, don't get yet just how unhappy folks really are.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea how that will show up, but at least in my lifetime, that's unprecedented.
The elements of each of the organizations that Frank alluded to there, Alan, the Tea Party on the one side and the Occupy movement on the other side, I've been struck by some of the thoughtful analyses that I've seen this week about the elements of each that the other agrees with, although they don't agree with the entirety of the other side's argument. The Tea Party and the Occupy movement, both very unhappy about bailouts, particularly TARP. And there are other common elements there, too. But I think the word that Frank used is probably the best that I've heard applied to it, and that's alienation. Just a sense that I'm not connected to this at all, and there's not a single thing I can do about this. I'm completely powerless when we've built our country on the idea that everybody has at least some small little bit of power and can influence, to some small degree at least, what's going on around him or her.
So the alienation word is perfect, because the difference between the Tea Party movement is and this new movement is the counter to alienation, which is empowerment. The Tea Party has made the world believe that if you don't go along with them, you will not get reelected. That is that when this new movement, if it ever does, gets coalesced enough that because the alienation is very broad. It's not just a few people who are angry that guys are making 150 times as much as the average worker,
mm-hmm.
and being bailed out by the government. That doesn't, you don't have to be very poor to feel anger at that.
Right.
So big groups of people, if this new movement gets organized as the Tea Party got organized, it's not unreasonable that they could go from alienation to empowerment very quickly.
Mm-hmm. The whole idea of this, I was thinking about this over the weekend as I watched some of the coverage of the protests in New York City in particular, and it occurred to me, maybe in a roundabout way, this will lead to what people have talked about for a long time, and that is, people say the ends of the spectrum are the tails wagging the dogs. And I wonder if at some point there won't be a group of people on the Hill that says, or who aren't on the Hill now but will come to the Hill, who will say, you know what, neither of these groups look like the people that I know, the people that I go to the grocery store with, or the people who are the other parents on my kid's soccer team. And there's a middle out there that doesn't agree with everything that the other side agrees with but wants to get things accomplished. And maybe that will be the path that we can follow back to the kind of collegiality, at least, even if it's not ideological agreement, that everybody recognizes doesn't really seem to exist in this town anymore.
Well, there's the remote possibility that you could be right.
Have you been talking to my wife again? That sounds like
no,
something she would say.
No, she doesn't admit any possibility.
Oh, that's fair enough.
But the conventional wisdom is that, you know, just as we see in the presidential primaries, at least right now on the Republican side, that the candidates play to the end of the spectrum but ultimately move to the middle, and that they will forge ideally some kind of consensus or at least get critical mass. And that could very well happen. I'm sensing something different going on here. I'm sensing that, in fact, the ends of the spectrum may get political mass. And in a way, as you've pointed out, on things like TARP, and if you listen to Ron Paul on individual liberty, he sounds an awful lot like a flaming liberal.
Some
like
of the
me.
Occupy folks.
I'll own that one. So on civil libertarian matters, there the ends of the spectrum to some degree meet, and so there is, if not a very large shared agenda, there is some shared agenda that may result in the game playing out in a slightly different way than we traditionally expected to, that candidates will voice fairly extreme views to win the support of the hardcore members of their party, but then move toward the center to win a general election. I'm not sure that happened. It certainly didn't happen in the 2010 congressional elections.
But maybe that's a case of where we're expecting too much too fast, and maybe this cake takes a little longer to bake than one election cycle.
I'll be a little less positive than either of you. I think the way we've made the congressional districts, shaped the congressional districts, makes all of what you're saying really hard.
That's a fair point. Really,
and no, nothing on the horizon other than this California experiment that even hints that we'll be able to turn that around.
And if we look at what's going on, I'm going to reference Maryland just because I live there and I've been paying attention to what's going on with redistricting there. And there are states where there are vast Republican majorities where the same thing is happening. So I'm not picking on Maryland as a Democratic state, but the unbelievable vehement fight that's going on about redistricting in Maryland, where you would think Governor O'Malley's effort, Maryland has 8 members of Congress. Governor O'Malley wants to change the districts in such a way that it will be a 7-1 setup in, or potentially 8-0 instead of the 6-2 Democrats to Republicans that it is now. And he's getting a harder fight from Democrats
yep.
than he is from Republicans, who are pretty much at this point helpless and saying there's nothing we can do about it anyway except say, oh, we don't like this very much. But he's really got a tremendous fight on his hands there when it becomes more a matter of not is our party still in power or does our party perpetuate its majority, but am I personally still there? And that's the thing when we go back to the alienation piece, that it strikes me that both the Occupy people and the Tea Party people, and I would say a whole lot of people in between, are most cynical about. Is the fact that it's not for a lot of people about ideology, is that it's about me and do I continue to do what I'm doing right now and continue to hold the power that I'm holding right now.
And in fact, in one sense, the pushback that O'Malley is getting is a cause for hope.
Just because, well, I don't know if I agree with you because, and again, I've seen this as I've followed this in states that are on the other side of the aisle, the pushback is from people who just want to perpetuate the
their jobs.
They want to
their,
keep their seats. Yeah. They want to keep it. It's not enough for the people that are supporting some of the folks that the seats stay Democratic or become more Democratic, and in other states that the seats stay Republican or become more Republican. It's that my guy or my woman continues to have the job that he or she has now, and I think that's what makes people really cynical and feel more alienated, as we've been talking about. Is that fair?
Very fair.
Frank Reeder's story number one on the countdown is headlined Occupy DC Protesters Rally in Freedom Plaza, and you can read it on federalnewsradio.com. Something to look forward to when we talk about Alan Paller's most important federal news story of the week. You've probably got story number one in your pocket, and we'll talk about that in a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Caps fans, don't miss 2 upcoming games at Verizon Center as the Caps battle the Ottawa Senators on Saturday, October 15th, and the Florida Panthers on Tuesday, October 18th. The Caps are off to a good start, defeating 2 division rivals to begin the season. Caps games are always huge events, and fans are always pumped up. This is the hottest ticket in town. The Caps have sold out over 100 straight games at Verizon Center, and tickets are extremely limited, so call 202-397-SEAT or log on to washingtoncaps.com/singletix to do your part in building America. Hockey capital.
Government IT executives, step into the past to start shaping the future. At this year's Executive Leadership Conference in Colonial Williamsburg, the American Council for Technology and the Industry Advisory Council's ELC Conference, October 23rd through the 25th, brings together government and industry leaders to address the acquisition, security, and human capital challenges you face in your increasingly mobile world. Register today at actgov.org. That's www.actgov.org.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week with Alan Paller and with Frank Reeder. And Alan, your story number one this week is a story that, as I mentioned, is probably in the pocket of a lot of people around Washington, D.C., especially people who work in government, and it concerns the BlackBerry outage this week. People's rested thumbs all over the district for a couple
the
of days.
The silver lining is that,
that's right.
Relaxed.
Right? Yeah, my thumbs weren't nearly as sore. I don't have a BlackBerry, but a lot of people I know do. And what do you take away from this outage? This is catastrophic for some organizations who depend on the BlackBerry network for communications.
It's catastrophic for organizations. It is so angering to individuals that it breaks the back of the stand that the information security people had taken, that we will support BlackBerries, but we will not support any of these unsafe Androids or uncontrollable iPhones. There's always an adjective in front of them that makes them unacceptable. That defense is over. Mm-hmm. This week, the forces of change will have become so powerful that the people who said we're not going to do it simply will not be able to stop. Now, I wouldn't have picked this story that way just to say that, because then I'm just creating a problem. But another thing happened this week at a conference that Howard Schmidt chaired, called the National Cybersecurity Innovation Conference. A fellow from one of the nuclear labs, I don't want to name him because I don't want to put him on the spot with everybody calling him yet. But so we'll get him to do a show with you or something. So
you can
do it. But they have found a way, and I don't mean they've experimented, but at scale, they have deployed iPhones and Android phones with security built in a way that doesn't anger their users substantially. So what I'm seeing is one of those tipping point moments when it was no one can use those iPads and iPhones for anything important. They can only use it for personal stuff, mm-hmm. switching to we're going to have to support them, and the security guys need to learn from the pioneers. I'm sure that's not the only organization that has done it. I'm sort of hoping others will call you and say, we've done it too, so that we don't say, oh, my God, we're just going to throw open the doors, but we're actually going to do it safely. And the most interesting element of it, and I want to put this out because it might get missed because the technologists will take it and they won't think about it. Mm-hmm. This interesting element was they didn't say, bring your iPhone in and we will support it. They said, we will make your iPhone supportable.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't have all of the Angry Birds on it that you might have wanted, but it is your iPhone with all the joys, and then they added capability. So instead of angering everybody and then trying to unanger them, they pleased everybody by giving them the capability, and then they added capabilities, building their app store, a safe mm-hmm. app store. It's a very nice model,
mm-hmm.
but it's the human dynamics and the corporate dynamics that I think are most interesting about it, that you can bring people over not by saying you can use your iPhone the way it is, but you can bring them over by giving them an iPhone that's safe and then making it more and more capable, or giving them an Android that's safe and making it more and more capable.
We're almost out of time, Frank, but it sounds like the mindset, at least, that Roger Baker's trying to implement at VA, which is, I want to be the CIO, yes, I think is the term that he uses. I want to tell people that they can do things and not that they can't do things.
What your audience just didn't see was me smiling as I was thinking back 3 years and 10 months when the folks who ran the infrastructure at the White House said, the president-elect wants to carry a what?
That's exactly right, and how far we've come in that amount of time. We've also come to the end of the hour, and it has been a terrific hour. Really enjoyed having you, Alan. I always like having you on the Countdown, Frank. It's a pleasure to see you. The Federal News Countdown will be posted for you at federalnewsradio.com. All the stories are already there, and you can hear the conversations again later on this afternoon on federalnewsradio.com. When we come back in hour number 2 of In Depth with Francis Rose, in just a few moments, fair is fair in the federal health insurance plan. Mike Causey has some words for the glass half empty crowd in just minutes on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.